When you think of water, what comes to mind? Do you think of famous paintings like this one from Monet? Or do you think of rain? Rain in all kinds of places. Sometimes really heavy rain. Do you think of waterfalls? Do you think of geysers? Maybe you think of fountains. Do you ever think of the ocean and waves crashing? Maybe you think of clouds, which of course are mostly just water. Or maybe you think of hurricanes, like this one over Katrina. Maybe you think of tidal waves. Or maybe you just think of some of the more ordinary things, like if you happen to have lived in places along the coast like I have, you might think of aquariums. Or maybe you just think of fun. But do you ever think of religion? Religious rituals and religious services often use water, like baptisms. And some funerals and memorials also use water. But that's not exactly what I mean. Religion, the word religion, comes from the Latin, meaning religare, meaning to take what has been separated, what has been disconnected, and connect it, to make it whole, to bind together separate parts. Is it possible that water can actually be a bridge instead of just creating a barrier? Does anybody recognize that? Alcatraz. Can water be religious? And by religious, I mean something that teaches us about reverence. Can water be something that teaches us about praise and about fairness? Can water be something that teaches us about cooperation and interdependence? These are the many things that so many of us come to church to try and find, but they are also the things that help us bind together. So to see if water can help us with that, let's think a little bit about water. What is water? Water is a molecule, of course, made up of two hydrogen atoms bound to one oxygen atom, and they stick together because of the negative electrical charge associated with the oxygen atom and the positive charges of the two hydrogen atoms, which means that when they come together, the molecule that's formed is polarized with a positive end and a negative end, which is what allows water molecules to bind together so tightly. The binding together of each water molecule is what allows water to flow, and it gives water what we know as surface tension. And it also is what allows us to siphon the water out of the ground, to have it follow a pump up out of the ground. Do you know how many molecules are in one drop of water to know how tightly water comes together? There are 1.67 times 10 to the 21st molecules in every drop of water. That's a trillion billion molecules all tightly packed together in every drop. And what they are doing all in that one drop of water is sustaining life and making life possible on the planet. For instance, did you know that the human body is 72% water, and that your brain is 80% water, and that your lungs are 90% water, and that we constantly need to drink water to replenish what we lose by sweating or by breathing or just by our bodies breaking down the food and turning it into energy, which requires water? The average human body can go over a month without food, but can only go 4 days without water. So where do we find all of this water that we need? 71% of the Earth's surface is covered in water. Unfortunately, 97% of this water is salt water and is undrinkable. And of the 3% that is drinkable, most of that is frozen. 0.6% of drinkable water comes from under the Earth's surface, and we have to pump it up to be able to use it. And 0.15% of fresh water comes from lakes and rivers. So, to put this in perspective, if all of the world's water were able to fit into 1 gallon jug, the amount of fresh water that is available to us to be able to drink would equal 1 tablespoon. And of that 1 tablespoon, 70% goes to farming. And 20% of that tablespoon goes to industrial manufacturing. Only 10% of that tablespoon goes to household consumption. So it stands to reason that we have to use our water carefully. So let's stop to think, how much water do we use? The average American uses between 80 and 150 gallons of water a day. The average European uses 25. In many parts of Africa, the average family uses only 5 gallons of water per day, mostly because that's all they can carry. 2.6 billion people today lack access to safe water and proper sanitation. So the family members in those families are required to walk long distances to get their water, which means that one or two people from every family walks an average of 15 kilometers a day. And they often wait in line for 2 hours or more to get the water that they then have to carry home. And most of the people carrying this water are women and children. In fact, it's calculated that in South Africa alone, 1 million women collectively walk the equivalent of 16 times the distance to the moon and back every day gathering water for their families. 16 times the distance to the moon and back. And when good water isn't available, they are often obliged to draw water from other sources. Did you know that 80% of all illness worldwide can be traced to contaminated water? So one of the great concerns today is what is happening to our source of fresh water. One thing that we know is that there is no new source of fresh water in the world. That in fact, we have the same 326 quintillion gallons of fresh water that we had a million years ago. And this water is just constantly being recycled by nature and naturally filtered. But we are also losing so much from global warming melting our supplies of glacial water and pesticides seeping into our underground sources of water and industrial waste and improper sanitation threatening our rivers and streams. We know these concerns about water are only going to get more and more urgent for our children and our children's children. And we know that water is not only life essential, it is life-giving. So the question that we'll consider today is, can water teach us its inherent understanding of how it binds together and help us to remember the blessing that is water and the obligation to share that blessing? In other words, can water be a bridge binding people together and not just a barrier creating divides between the haves and the have-nots? This remains to be seen, and it is up to us. And the world is watching. How many people recognize that story, Mumbaya and God? Maybe you haven't heard that particular story. How many people recognize it in the world today? About who owns the well and who owns the water? And have ever heard of the privatization of water? It's important to remember the polarizing nature of water, how water has both negative and positive forces within it, just like people, and just like religion. And like never before, people all over the planet are coming together in the challenge that we are facing around water in the next 20 years. In fact, in 2008, the then UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon cited research identifying 46 countries of a combined population of 2.7 billion people where contention over water will create, quote, a high risk of violent conflict by the year of 2025. The place that we may already be familiar with such conflict is in China, but are we aware of why that conflict has gone on for so long? One of the sure reasons is because China, in its rush to industrialize, have polluted all of its sources of fresh water and is now dependent upon Tibet, which has the second largest supply of fresh water with the Himalayan glaciers. This may all seem like it's very far away from us, but it's much closer than we would think. In fact, Canada has 20% of the world's fresh water, and it's becoming very wary of its water-thirsty superpower to the south. Only a few years ago, in fact, Canada's House of Commons voted to begin efforts to exclude water from the scope of the North American Free Trade Act. Many local governments in the United States have been struggling with costly public water systems and have attempted to bolster their failing budgets by selling water rights to private companies. Here we see a private water company holding the handle to the pump and explaining how the public isn't allowed to access it, but you can buy your water from us. When water systems become privatized, the emphasis switches from service to profit, and fewer regulations control costs and control safety. Private companies often find it more profitable to simply pay environmental fines rather than fully maintaining the purity or the availability of their water. And of course, water only goes to those who can pay for it. What happens if someone owns the water and someone who needs it can't pay for it? Consider the story of this man, who you might recognize as T-Boone Pickens, a multi-billion dollar business tycoon. You might recognize him from his book, The First Billion is the Hardest. Originally, he was a geologist, and he made all of his money in the Texas oil business, but he became famous in the 70s, 80s, and 90s for his practices as a corporate raider, where he purchased and gutted oil companies for their commodities so that he could obtain land and distribution rights. Well, in the past 10 years, Pickens has spent nearly $100 million buying up all the land around underground water reservoirs in the Southwest, essentially buying water rights so that he could sell water to thirsty communities as a commodity. The question for us becomes, what happens when an essential ingredient that makes life possible goes up for sale? And the real question, if someone can't pay, does that mean the owner of the water can let them die without anyone calling it murder? These are important questions because they point to a fundamental polarizing motivation within every person, and the question of whether we choose to live from the side that is motivated by fear or the side that is motivated by love. When there is a part of our nature that calls us to share and cooperate and celebrate the diversity and abundance of life around us, and another part that feels the threat of scarcity and seeks to secure an advantage, which will win? It is important to ask the questions, who owns the well and who owns the water? Because when we stop to think about it, who owns these owns life. But doesn't it also follow that whoever owns life also owns the responsibility to uphold life? These questions are ones we need to be very wise to answer. Can water teach us its hidden wisdom, help us to understand how to overcome the nature of the polarization at our core, and help us learn how to bind together with what is around us? Can we learn to turn our essential nature into a bridge instead of just a barrier? The world and our children are waiting and watching for what we will do. This is our annual water communion ceremony. How many people have been to a water communion ceremony before? It's often a very beloved tradition because it is celebrated in nearly 75% of our UU congregations. And most often, it's celebrated as an ingathering and a returning after the unpredictable ventures of many of us going hither and yon over the summer. And coming back together, it's joyful to see one another again. Now, it's also a ritual that many of us have come to love because commonly celebrated in the water communion ceremony is asking people to bring with them a small vessel of water that they can pour into a common bowl and say the place of significance that they visited in the recent past. And it's become special partly because it has given people a way to hear where their community has gone and how far they and Unitarian Universalism extend out into the world. But it's also nice to know that before people go on vacation like that, they actually remember to think to take a vial with them, which is a sort of like remembering to think to take their community with them, and that at some point in this place of great significance, that they pull out their community, and their community is with them, and then they gather water and they bring that back to their community. So it's a way of binding together people and community. But as dear as this practice has been for some people, there are others who have found the ritual that emerged from it a little troubling. Members in some congregations who practice water communion began to say that it felt a little bit like people getting up and pouring their water and then bragging about all of the special, very exotic vacations that they've been to and who could go to the furthest place and how they could tell others about it. And I have to say that this certainly was not intended and not what the original people who created water communion really had in mind. Does anybody know the story of the original water communion and what the people had in mind besides those people who were at the first service? It's worth saying a few words about that original gathering and what they did and why they did it so that we know a little bit about the ritual that we have today and that we carry on. In November of 1980, the UUA Committee on Women and Religion held a convocation in East Lansing, Michigan. It was themed about feminist theology. The Women in Religion Resolution of 1977 passed General Assembly, but there were many women and men who were disappointed with the lack of progress that we had in our society of moving beyond sexist religion that was pervading religion, and even moving beyond sexist attitudes that were pervading our culture. Even in our movement of Unitarian Universalism, which is known to be fairly progressive, people noticed that although women were now becoming ministers, that few occupied major pulpits. And the ordination of ministers of color and ministers who were gay and lesbian was still in its infancy. The opening worship, now known or that we call the water communion or water ritual, was originally called Coming Home, Like Rivers to the Sea, a woman's ritual. And it was created by three women in particular, by Carolyn McDade, who is that one second to the left. She is famous for writing our hymn, Spirit of Life, and she also wrote the anthem that we'll hear in a few minutes. Lucille Shuck Longview, who's on the right, and Rosemary Mattson, who's a good friend of mine on the far left. They spoke in this service about the subtle ways in which they, as young girls, were raised to understand that as women, they didn't really matter as much, and they weren't worth as much as the men around them, and how subtly and how informally this was indoctrinated into the life of every girl growing up in our culture, and that it was patronizingly explained as, well, that's just the way that it is. And they often struggled with the unfairness and also feeling alone in that unfairness, like they couldn't tell anyone. And so getting a chance to pour their story into a common bowl of other people who had stories helped them feel like they were connected, like they mattered, like there were other people who understood. Now, those who registered for the conference were asked to bring a vial of water with them to the conference from where they lived. And during the opening ceremony, they were asked to come forward and pour their water into a common bowl and say where their water and where their story came from, as if to say, this, the thing that nurtured me, understands the thing that nurtured you, and we know what this struggle is. The women who presented this first water ritual were not trying to start a new tradition, but so powerful were the participants' experiences that after the ceremony was over, dozens and dozens of them asked if they could take the vial which they had poured in and now collect a little bit of that water with everybody's story and bring it back to their community so that they could have their own ceremony of healing and inclusion. They wanted to be enlivened and empowered just like they wanted to enliven and empower others just like they had been enlivened and empowered in this ceremony. Now, over the years of practicing this, things changed. And of course, it became a ritual for more than just women. It became for men and children and elders. And the water began to become collected from places that we had gone rather than places where we were from. And over the years, the original story of how this all started got a little bit lost and is rarely told. But it's important to know, because as the ritual evolved, one thing really remained the same, and that is that it felt like worship. It felt like worship in the truest sense, which is to say, from the Anglo-Saxon word worship, which comes from the word wurtzeip, actually means to shape worth, to take what is worthy within us and around us and beyond us and give it shape with our lives and our deeds. When we can do this, we give it praise and we give it value and we give it shape. It's about considering even the most difficult issues, like what we were talking about with water distribution, and trying to bring a sense of inclusion and fairness. And it's about noticing how something so life-giving isn't always shared the way that it's needed, and it becomes polarizing rather than connecting. And we feel a deep need for some sort of cooperation and for a way to bind together. Is it possible that the life-giving properties of water can teach us to bind together, help us to become more like a bridge for one another instead of being a barrier to one another's worth and dignity? It's up to us to see through the distortions that come between us, to see those things that keep us apart and understand that water is part of us and we are part of it. It can bind us together or it can tear us apart. What happens is up to us. The world and our children are watching. In a moment, we're going to begin our own water communion tradition to celebrate the coming back together of members and friends like rivers to the sea, as it was done so many years ago. And we come forward to pour ourselves and our stories into this community. And as we do, we hope that you will remember this. Just like every molecule of water, each one of us possesses life-giving and life-affirming properties. These were passed on to us, and we pass them on to others in the form of time and attention and care. In other words, in the form of love. Now, we as individuals, we're not the ultimate source of where love comes from, nor are we intended to be the destination of love. Although it feels good when we're around love, we're intended to be carriers of that love, to take it as it was given to us and pass it on to where it is needed. So when you come and pour your water, we'd like you to say one word or a name of one thing that you plan on pouring your love into that you will help it grow. For instance, you might simply say community, or you might say teaching children, or you might say being a friend. But it's important to also say that as a church, as a religious community, we exist to help provide opportunities for people to pour themselves back into the world for positive change. That is why Susie and the Green Sanctuary Committee is sponsoring this service, because they help provide for us opportunities that we can pour our time and attention and care and love into the world and make it better. So you may say that you're pouring your water in to feed the hungry if you plan on working with the food pantry. Or you may say that we are here helping make the world safer for gays and lesbians if you happen to be working with PFLAG. But first I'm going to pour this water right here, which is special water. This water comes from your water communions of the past. And poured into this is water from water communions that I brought here and that other ministers bring here that have come from congregations all over the planet to indicate love exists here when you arrive, and we are called to add to it and to make that love as bountiful and as powerful as possible. So as you come forward, we invite you to just say a word or one thing that you plan to pour your love into. If it's a project or an organization or something maybe that Social Justice Committee has organized to help us do here at the church, what is that one thing that's going to receive your time and care and attention? And to start us out, I would like to ask the two side aisles to come forward to make a line on this side and make a line on this side. And as you pour your water in, Chris Star and Richard will be there with the microphones. If you didn't bring water with you, there are pitchers of water for you to pour in. Please come forward from the sides.